Having a teen feels like having your own live-in influencer. Somehow you know the latest makeup trend and the fact that skinny jeans are not the most flattering pants. Now it's time for you to show them what's up, thanks to Domino's. From April 22nd through April 28th, carry out as many large two-topping pizzas from Domino's as you want for only $6.99 each. And teach your kiddo that saving money and Domino's pizza will never go out of style. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 422 through 428. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Welcome to Killing Time, hosted by two girls, one ginger.
That's me.
Hey.
Hi. Today is a very special episode of Killing Time.
God, we had a special month.
We have had a crazy month of our guests.
Aaron and Denise, Holly, Tamron Hall. Like, I feel like dwarfed by the success of all of the people we've had the pleasure of talking to in the last
month. Being me right now. Holly Madison was just sitting in this chair. Now it's my ogre.
Honestly,
ugly ass.
She was sitting in Jack's chair. Yeah. And I want to sit in that chair.
Yeah. I got her energy. It's like,
I want the energy.
I love it.
God, I love her.
Well, today is a very special episode because yesterday, if you've listened to our regular first three episode, we had the absolute pleasure of interviewing Tamron Hall.
True icon.
The icon herself. It was literally one of the best conversations I've ever had in my entire life.
Like staring at the sun.
She's impeccable.
Well, and it was one of those things where you talk about something so emotional and in depth and specific, and then just organically we're going off into all these meaningful sort of layers that exist within these situations. And I just thought, she's a genius. She is as nice as she seems on her talk show.
She's literally like a ray of sunshine.
She's actually kind. Insane. She's open. It's just unreal. Cause like I watch her show every day and Jack had interviewed her before on Lady Gang and I hadn't. So I was super nervous. And she is just the most like loving, open, wonderful person that it's like they say, never meet your heroes. But I beg to differ with this one.
Ooh, love that.
Yeah.
Well, that being said, the interview was so good.
So
and
good.
Obviously we chop it up for our first degree episode, but there was so much that was said that we didn't get to actually put in the episode.
Right.
And we thought we would just play the full interview front to back.
Uncut,
unfiltered for this Killing Time. But we wanted to still do the day because,
yeah, of course.
You know,
there's gotta do the day.
We got to have a little banter.
Got to give you something.
Yeah.
But also, if you are on our Patreon, you can obviously get this in video and the video of the interview as well. So you can see Tamron's beautiful face and her iconic outfit.
Honestly, queen. She looked incredible.
Queen.
You want me to go?
Say queen.
Queen.
Yes, Jared.
Okay, so we'll get into the day without any further ado.
Without.
Are you ready?
Yes.
So today is March 14th, and that is, Jared?
March 14th is 1 week before my birthday.
Also, 3.14.
Pi Day.
Pi Day.
Wow.
It is Pi Day.
3.14.
How much of pi? Okay. I can say 7 digits of pi. How many can you say?
This sounds like you just wanted to flex. I got 3.14. That's all
really?
I know.
Really?
I have 6. 3.1426.
No.
Yeah.
3.14159.
Oh. Then
I
none.
Love it. Hey, what's my phone number? Wait, don't say it. Don't say it on the podcast.
I don't know it.
That's my point.
I just learned Matt's and then you had to change his number.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know Jared's and I also, it's a
480.
Okay.
818. No, that's our first degree number.
818-446-6889.
Well, because on my iMessage on my computer, Jared's phone number isn't stored as Jared. It's just
480.
So I know it's a 480.
It probably says Jack's new boyfriend, parentheses, will probably delete soon.
Bye.
No, the other thing I cannot remember if Jared's is his passcode to his phone. And like,
why do you need that?
Well, just when I need to get
in. That's my question. Well, there's nothing in there
Jared,
for you.
When I need to get in your phone for like a picture or something, I cannot remember it.
You can just swipe up to get to the camera though. I don't even need the code.
Well, no, to get into the photos. But or if I need to get into his phone for whatever, well, I do not know your passcode.
If
he dies,
I don't know Matt's either.
Or if he goes disappears and his phone is left, like I literally don't know how to get.
It honestly doesn't even. Yeah, I don't know.
First off, I'm not dying. Second off, I'm not disappearing. I'm gonna be fine. If you do remember my pin or my phone pin, don't say it out loud because it's my pin for everything, which could be bad. Uh-oh. I know yours. I know everything about you.
I know.
So that's why this. Might have to discuss this off camera.
It's a little like unbalanced.
I'm in a phase where I have no secrets. Matt knows all my shit.
Does he? Good.
I like how you say I'm in a phase where I have no secrets.
I used to have a lot.
You did used to have a lot of secrets.
I used to be elusive.
Really?
Where I didn't tell anyone anything.
Yeah, we don't like
that.
Like
not even my friends. I would do something crazy and not tell anyone.
You were also doing weird shit back in the day.
That's right.
You don't do weird shit anymore that I know of.
No.
As long as it wasn't like hiking into the wilderness by yourself.
No.
Okay. No, it was mostly with men.
Dun dun dun.
Okay, let's get into it.
I was having a hard time. I was healing.
I know.
I'm a healed individual now.
That's true. I love that for you.
Thank you.
Okay. Nothing happened in the world until 1889 on Pi Day. 39. Sir John Herschel referred to photography, his new word, in a lecture to the Royal Society.
His word.
His new word. I like he has a word of the day. Photography. 1839.
Wow.
Is when that got brought into the vernacular.
Do you think it was like painters back then were worried like how we are now about AI? Like photography is going to take all their jobs?
Probably.
Yeah. Mm. Oh.
Except
yes.
It probably spread very slowly. The yes. Yeah. The panic was
because they had like the big flash bulb and like it was a whole thing.
And to develop and take a photograph probably took as long as it did to paint somebody.
Correct. Because the darkroom thing, the chemicals, it was probably a big slog to unify this whole thing.
Yeah.
So this is the guy who like came up with the word.
I don't know. It said refer to photography, quote unquote, his new word. I don't even know if he was a photographer.
Well, I think like
Sir John Herschel. Not fact. All right. 1899. Count Ferdinand von Zeppelin was issued a U.S. patent for the invention of his navigable zeppelin balloon.
I don't know if that's the way to say it either.
Navigable. There's no T in that. Navigable. Doesn't sound like a word.
I'm not gonna say it again.
Okay.
I already got it wrong once. I don't do wrong twice.
1912. U.S. best-selling cookie Oreo trademarked its name on 3.14.
Whoa.
1912. Wow, really? Oreos have been around for a fuck long time.
1912.
Did they just patent the name? Because I've seen a lot of Oreo knockoffs.
But they're not as good. They always...
Have you ever tried a Hydrox?
No, that sounds like some cleaning agent.
Yeah,
a Hydrox was an Oreo, like, Oreo's competitor.
Really?
Yeah. Obviously, it didn't get that
clearly
far.
Clearly, Oreo smashed
that.
No,
I'm fascinated by
that. I think it's the name. The name really throws you off.
Oreo.
Here's my question.
Hydrox. Doesn't sound like something you should eat.
I'm going to do a Google for the next killing time, because... We need to know more.
Okay.
I have a question. So you're saying Oreo founded in 1912?
Yeah.
Patented or whatever?
Trademarked its name.
Trademarked. Okay, so that cookie, I wonder, has it been that chocolate cookie with the cream?
Has it been an Oreo the entire time?
If that's been...
Has it been a sandwich cookie?
Yeah, sandwich cookie. Has this been a sandwich cookie for over a century?
If so, that'd be crazy.
That's crazy.
Let's look it up.
Man, think about that.
Conceptually, it makes a lot of sense. Like, think about two. I bet you before the Oreo, it was like two cookies and jam.
Yeah.
Gross. Fruit. Fuck me. But, you know, two cookies and some ice cream.
Well, like, the infatuation with the Oreo. What? Oh, what?
Tell us.
Okay. So, Oreo was introduced by Nabisco on March 6th, 1912. So, this is a lie. But that's fine. A week earlier than this.
No, March 6th, and then
I guess trademarked.
And then trademarked a
March
week later.
14th.
Yeah.
It says that Oreos are an imitation of the Hydrox chocolate cream centered cookie.
Hydrox came first
in 1908, but it was outstripped. It outstripped Hydrox in popularity so largely that many believe that Hydrox is an imitation.
She knew.
Of
she knows
Oreo.
What's cool before it's cool.
You are
she
a, knows. You are a sandwich cookie connoisseur.
I don't know. I'm like this with a lot of things, to be honest.
This is new. I didn't expect you to.
The Hydrox But I know this because my grandma only had Hydroxes at her house growing up. And okay. I thought they were not the knockoff Oreo. I didn't know the difference. But this is only one example. Like yeah. Hula Hoop, for the Hula Hoop, there was a Spin a Hoop. And it didn't, that was first, but it didn't do as well as the Hula Hoop. And wow. that's why Hydrox is first, but it didn't do as well as the Oreo.
Wait, wow. but is the Spin a Hoop the same thing as a Hula Hoop?
Yes.
I mean, how different could you really get, I guess?
Correct.
It's just a hoop. Thing.
But it's just branding. You do better branding. And well, then yeah. You...
Everything is branding.
I got to say, though, I'm really proud of Meemaw for sticking with the originals.
Meemaw knows yeah. what's up.
I got to say, I'm
brand loyalty.
You,
yeah?
The Hydrox name, it was really the name that fucked them.
Bad name.
Yeah. Again, cleaner. Clorox.
Yeah.
It's like you're cleaning your sink. Well, you're not eating a delicious
I don't
cookie.
Think they make Hydrox anymore, but Oreos are around.
No, Oreo literally like...
Ganked.
Hydroxy ganked. Cut. Isn't that like a...
Yeah, that's like a weight loss scam.
Perfect.
Okay. 1950.
The direct answer to the Hydrox. It's Hydroxy Cut. It's literally, like, Hydroxy Cut.
Yeah, have you eaten too many Hydroxes? Try Hydroxy Cut.
So good.
Okay.
1950. Unreal. I can't believe that.
1950, the FBI instituted the 10 most wanted fugitives list. And I went and looked at the original list, if anything was like kind of interesting on there. There wasn't, but I looked at today's list.
There wasn't.
Today's list, there is one lady on the FBI 10 most wanted list.
Wow, just one fancy lady?
One fancy lady. Ruga Agatova.
Ruga.
A Bulgarian-born German entrepreneur who in 2019 was convicted of fraud. She is best known as the founder of the fraudulent cryptocurrency scheme known as OneCoin.
OneCoin.
Ooh. Have you ever heard about OneCoin?
No, I got it. Crypto caught my interest for about a week. And then I was out.
Well, crypto's a scam.
Yeah. Once Twitter started feeling like a Ponzi scheme with like all the bros that I knew that were like hawking this
crypto
shit,
bros,
I was
yeah.
out. So I don't know it.
Well, she was the founder of OneCoin, and she is on the run.
She sounds like a bad bitch.
I know.
On the run.
She's a
fugitive.
Is it a
victimless crime, other than the bros?
Probably not.
Mm. I'm sure people lost their asses over this.
I mean, maybe nobody was killed. I'm sure somebody was killed along the
Crypto
way.
Crypto was a fucking risk. They were pretty open about that. Yeah. Everyone knew it was. It was never
No, it was kind of like, it was sort of pushed as not a risk.
Bitcoin.
I mean, it's... primarily known as a risk. The whole idea with crypto is it's
off the grid.
It's volatile.
Yeah, and it's not FDIC yeah. insured or regulated yeah. or whatever. So,
but what I will
people
say,
people sold the dream because yeah, it was course. A Ponzi scheme,
well,
kind of
good marketing. You know,
good marketing.
Yeah,
it could be the Hydrox, not the Oreo people.
Everybody wanted the Bitcoin.
We're talking about all kinds of stuff we don't know about right now.
Dogecoin.
Dogecoin.
That was Musk's big.
Here's my thought, and Musca? I know
Musk's. Muskies.
Musky boy.
My thought on that is, and I know you guys know because I put it, I wanted Elon Musk to go to jail the other week, but any currency that can be manipulated by one person
is too risky.
Scares me. Yeah. And that's what Dogecoin was, because Elon would tweet a picture of the Doge and then you'd see the value of the coin just like skyrocket.
Yeah,
right.
That scared me a little bit. So I was like, that's another reason why I was like, I'm out.
Also, he's trying to change the English language, like Doge.
Well, that's
a meme.
He didn't
make up Doge.
That's from memes.
It was
a meme.
It was a meme.
It's a meme. It's a Shiba Inu.
I don't want to be a meme.
I love Shiba Inus.
1951, UPI photographer Arthur Sassy, or Sass.
Sassy.
It's S-A-S-S-E, asked Albert Einstein to smile.
To say.
But instead, he stuck his tongue out. Hence, we have the famous photo
awesome
of Albert Einstein sticking his tongue out. Apparently, well, it's also Albert Einstein's birthday today.
Happy birthday, Al.
He's dead. Well, we know he's dead.
May he rest.
I don't think he died that long ago.
He did. He
I think
died.
He died in like the 90s.
He died a while ago.
But he was like alive when we
90s
were alive.
Is a long time ago now.
Fuck.
Like 30 some years.
Fuck.
I know.
Yeah, I read something the other day that said we are as far away
like
from 1994 as we are from
like 2050.
2054.
Ew.
So gross. Yeah.
Hey, may we all be so lucky to live to 2050.
Aging is a gift.
Yes, because otherwise it means you're dead.
That's right.
This is what Jack said so poignantly the other day, and now that's what I say whenever I'm like, I'm tired.
Or like wrinkle. It's aging as a gift.
Aging is a
gift. There's no wrinkle.
No, there's no wrinkle.
No, the Botox is really...
I haven't had Botox in a long time.
I haven't either, actually. I need
some. Me either.
Okay, 2018, Stephen Hawking died.
Ooh.
He's Bye. Gotten some bad press recently.
Honestly, Bye. I've learned a lot about him. Not a fan.
Not a fan. Bad press.
You know what I read the other day?
This man... cheats and lies and philanders, was on Epstein's Island, probably in an orgy, based on what's been released.
But we knew he was a cheater before the Epstein stuff.
This man, who can't even talk, is managing to cheat on his hot wives.
That's what I'm saying. Dude, men are trash. Men are trash.
I don't know.
And they all fucking cheat, except for Jared.
And except for Matt. But I'll say, he's in a deeply insecure position. So it wouldn't surprise me that he's like, can I do better than that? Like, if a woman expresses interest, it doesn't surprise me because he's so limited in A, his mobility, B, his ability to express himself. But I was also reading about one of his really volatile relationships, how they would just like wheel him outside in the heat and leave him there.
Oh my God.
Because like people who are disabled literally can just be, you know, like, what are you going to do about
Stranded,
it?
Stranded, basically.
Yeah, like it's impossible.
Oh my goodness.
To get help sometimes because there was just a big TV show that had a scenario like that. But
you know what I read about him when we were going through our Today I Learned segment, like looking for Today I Learns. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I read was he would intentionally run over people's toes that he didn't like. But make it seem like an accident.
Whoop.
And I was like, you know what?
I'm into that.
I would do that.
I love a subtle little
jab.
A little petty crime.
Petty crime. Love that.
Kind of victimless. Depends. Yeah. I'm a bit like a trip. Running over is not bad. A trip could kill you.
Yeah.
But a toe run over is fine.
In 2018, identical twins were no longer identical after one returned from a mission from space.
Did their DNA change?
You're talking about Scott Kelly and his brother.
Yeah, Scott Kelly spent 1 year in space, and upon his return, NASA found out that his genes had changed by 7%, which is fucking a lot.
What did they... was it the nuclear... Was it the radiation?
Yeah, so one of the big things that they're finding out, because I think a Russian cosmonaut just broke the record for the longest amount of time in space. It was like 800-something days.
No thanks.
Which is bananas when you think about it. That's 2.5 years.
How the hell do you even get your muscles back?
So... Essentially, what they've been finding
out. They
work
out up there.
Well, they do.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to like assess all kinds of different things in relation to humans going the distance, timeline wise, in traveling.
Do you think the
space.
Aliens are feeling the heat? They're like, they're almost here.
Yeah,
no,
right.
No, because we're not. We're so fucking
fragile. They're
probably
so far, different galaxy. Go ahead. Sorry.
I think at best, we're an ant farm, but that's a different thing. In this scenario, we're trying to study like the effects on the human body in space. So they're trying to find out.
I don't want to be that guinea pig.
But radiation is, that's why I was bringing this up. It's one of those giant concerns because they want to know like how, if the longer you're up there, are you more likely to develop cancer? What are the effects on the human body? We all know aside from your muscles deteriorating because there's lack of gravity, all that shit is like pretty obvious, but there's a whole other subset where you're talking about your
literally changing your DNA.
DNA.
I'm fascinated by that, though. What changing your DNA seems like? I understand cells accelerating in growth. Like what we know radiation does all these things, but changing your DNA seems super interesting to me.
Yeah, and to be honest,
he doesn't know.
I play guitar in a band. So. Okay,
so well, it is interesting because it's like, are you more apt to get cancer? Like that's not changing your DNA. Like
no, that's just rapidly rapid growth of cells.
But
we know that radiation does strange things. None of this would surprise me. And we know like the danger of like if you do an x-ray, they put those lead vests on you and shit. Like we know that. And it's like probably like being in an x-ray machine for fucking 800 days.
Yeah. Well, and kind of like Jack was saying, aging is a gift. Being within the Earth's atmosphere is a wonderful gift because you have to realize how much shit we're protected from.
Honestly.
Day to day. On like just so many things. If you think about like I'm going deep now, but
my emotional comfort tassel because you were stressing me out. Going to aurora, space sounds so scary.
The aurora borealis. Do you know what's going on with the northern lights? How that works? The Earth is shooting radiation and photons and all this shit. These flares come at the Earth. The magnets of the Earth deflect it, and it all circles up around at the top and burns up in the atmosphere, and that's why you see the northern lights.
It's fucking crazy.
Earth is literally protecting us all the time.
It is.
Why does Earth have her back so bad? What have we ever done for her?
We're not doing a great job. We're not holding up our end.
But this is what I'm saying. It is so fucking, they make it so hard to leave Earth. Maybe we're not supposed to. Maybe we're supposed to stay here.
No, we're supposed to go.
I'm fucking down to stay here.
I don't think we're going.
We're supposed to go.
I gotta admit, I don't think we're going anywhere.
I like it here.
It's nice here.
I love it here.
There's snow. There's desert. There's
an
ocean.
Talk about like volatility. No thanks.
I love it here, but you know
I'm
what?
I'm not going to Mars.
What's out there?
What if cavemen said
no oxygen? What if cavemen
said I'm never gonna leave this cave?
Good. Be safe.
We wouldn't be here.
It was easier to leave the cave than it is to leave the planet.
Mm. I don't know, a lot of stuff trying to kill you.
No, they always left the cave because they had to hunt and gather.
Yeah, they're not just sitting in the cave and dying.
Yeah, Jared.
They probably did until they realized they had to eat.
No, they went out.
You think?
I think we're supposed to go.
No, because if we came from monkeys, like...
Jared, it's too hard. We're not going. Even if we can go, it takes too fucking long.
We're not going.
We haven't figured out wormholes.
Don't make us...
I don't like this attitude.
We're going to die before we do anything.
Correct.
Yeah. You're thinking too narrow.
You're thinking too big.
You're thinking... You've got crazy thoughts going on.
No, this is one where I do align with my boy, Elon. I think we got to go.
All right, so you go hang out with Elon.
You think we got to go, but we're not going in our lifetime.
We're not going.
Correct.
So what does it matter?
It matters
maybe
a great deal.
Maybe your child's going.
No. What if little Jack and Jer Junior goes?
I'm gonna be so dead by then. I won't
hella dead.
I don't know.
Like, oh well.
Bye.
Anyways.
Bye.
Anyways,
way to be ambitious.
The idea is exciting to me.
It is, but
the radiation,
too scary.
Too scary.
It was more exciting and now it's scary. Okay. 2019, Google employee Emma Haruka, broke the world record by calculating pi right down to 31.4 trillion digits. No thanks.
Don't know what that means. Can't do short division, frankly.
Well, yeah,
you saw me. Jack challenged me. She put a short division in front of me. I was like,
I barely remember long division.
Short division I can do. Long division was impossible.
Yeah.
I don't divide.
No, I don't divide. I can multiply. Okay, 2023.
I don't divide.
Just 1 year ago, OpenAI released ChatGPT-4, an upgraded version of their popular artificial intelligence chatbot. And now we're getting all of the video ChatGPT shit. Like, it's getting crazy
over here.
Deepfake
times.
Yeah, what do they call it? Is it like Sora? I forget, it had a name.
Are deepfakes, is that, what's the word I'm looking for? Freeing? Are they freeing?
Freeing for who?
For anybody.
Meaning?
That could be deepfaked.
Freeing?
Is it freeing?
I would be freed.
That's what I'm saying.
I'd be like, cool, make a fake porn of me. Then it's fake. Everyone knows it's fake.
Then like anything you do that's real could just be a deep fake.
Yeah.
Not that I'm doing weird shit.
Neither.
But like,
I don't know. You both are alluding.
Nor
to stuff
have
that,
I.
I mean, I
ever.
Didn't say it. You said it.
Would I ever? Have I ever?
Alexis is
She's
never
on
done
the website typing
weird.
In me in a porno.
Why? Never.
I mean, you know what? In all things that are created, there's someone who uses it for good and someone who uses it for evil. I use AI.
It's someone who's just trying to express themselves.
Yes. Yeah. Someone who's like really excited
to
see themselves.
Someone, not me.
Yeah.
It's not me. But I'm not trying to. I'm not trying to kink shame anyone.
No. Go nuts.
No, never.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all that's happened.
God, that was good.
That was a great.
Fuck,
that's how
I'm
we
sad
did
it's
this.
Over.
I know. We'll come back next week.
But Tamron is that good. Imagine all you heard, and Tamron's even better.
Tamron's even better. So I hope you enjoy this interview that we had with Tamron Hall.
Love you guys.
Bye.
Having a team feels like having your own live-in influencer. Somehow you know the latest makeup trend and the fact that skinny jeans are not the most flattering pants. Now it's time for you to show them what's up, thanks to Domino's. From April 22nd through April 28th, carry out as many large two-topping pizzas from Domino's as you want for only $6.99 each. And teach your kiddo that saving money and Domino's pizza will never go out of style. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 422 through 428. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary.
When I was growing up, I took French in high school, but I could never get the language to stick. I wanted to be fluent so bad, but it never happened. I just couldn't focus and I couldn't practice enough and it didn't work. But thankfully, there's Rosetta Stone, which is the most trusted language learning program, and it's available on desktop or it can be used as an app on your phone or tablet. Rosetta Stone is different. It immerses you in so many ways. And with its intuitive process, you can pick up any language naturally, first with words, then phrases, and then sentences. And before you know it, boom, conversations. Plus, with Rosetta Stone's true accent feature, you'll get feedback on how well you're pronouncing words. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, the First Degree listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/first. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/first today. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for all of your springtime goals. If you don't have time, Factor's ready-to-eat meals are on the table in 2 minutes. So you just get to eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, cleaning up. You really just heat and savor the good stuff without all of the stress. You can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. Plus, you can pause and reschedule your deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Factor is your solution to premium, fast meals without the need for cooking. And they're celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. I'm so busy, so it's amazing to just have Factor meals in the fridge for whenever I realize that I'm starving and I don't have any time to cook anything. They're amazing, they're healthy, and they keep you fueled all day long. Head to factormeals.com/degree50 and use code degree50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's degree50 at factormeals.com/degree50. 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Hey, there's no reason to feel sad or guilty about the things you aren't using anymore. Whether it was a fancy dress you wore to a gala, expensive heels that only go with one of your outfits, or that crossbody bag from when you were in your music festival era. Somebody out there wants what you don't, and The Real Real makes it easy to get it to them. When your past becomes their future, everyone wins, especially the planet. For The Real Real, Earth Month isn't just another month. It's what they do every day. At any given moment, they're finding new homes for over 1 million unique items within their community of 35 plus million people. They're the largest luxury reseller in the world, and making a tangible difference towards a more sustainable future for fashion. Resale reduces the amount of fashion waste in landfills, lowers greenhouse gas emissions, and offers an alternative to the cycle of consumption propagated by fast fashion. The Real Real has kept over 37 million items in circulation and out of landfills. This month only, new shoppers get 20% off when they shop on therealreal.com using code FIRST. That's therealreal.com using the code FIRST.
Okay, so our guest today literally needs no introduction. Anybody listening to the podcast right now is a super fan of Tamron Hall, including us. We watch her show every single day. Alexis, I mean, how starstruck are you right now?
Very. I watch your show every day. I mean, working from home, I always have TV in the background and it's just, I leave it on and I'm excited to watch it every day. You're one of my favorite people to watch on TV.
Oh, thank you. That means the world to me. Thank you so much. I feel loved. I feel like a warm hug, like the sun beaming down in this room on me. So thank you. It's great to be here with you.
Yes, obviously we have Tamron Hall with us and you are here because the second installment of your Jordan Manning crime series book is coming out March 12th. Yeah. Watch Where They Hide. We both have it.
Amazing.
Thank you.
It was amazing.
No, we're so happy to have you. How is it? Like, how do you feel right now? It's your second book.
Yeah.
Like, what are all the feelings that are swirling around your head?
Oh, wow. You know, I'm nervous. I'm humbled that people would pick up my novel and read it. You know, not that I've become used to people watching what I do on TV, but I've been doing that for 30 years and the talk show now is in its fifth season. I think I have my sea legs, you know, I'm feeling grounded in the show and what we are doing. And when I decided to write this crime novel, it was in the first one, middle of the pandemic, I'd never, you know, even really thought about how to construct a thriller. I just said, you know, I'm going to do it. I'm, you know, 50 years old. We're locked in our homes. The level of uncertainty for all of us, nothing that we could have ever imagined. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to step out and just do it, Tamron, just do it. And when I started to actually write down this character, Jordan Manning, and who she is and the inspiration for my own life, it flowed from me because when it's time for you to try something new, when you take that big step, I find that so many people tell me the same feeling that I had. It just opens up. And so there was Jordan just opening up, and now we're in their second book. And I can't believe that. I'm happy that I wrote it. I'm even more just astonished how people have received it. Isn't that crazy? I don't know. I'm a ball of mush over this thing. And the bottom line, I am thrilled that I did it. And I'm even more just grateful to the people who supported it and picked up the book like yourselves to read it. I know that was a long ass answer, but I'm just a ball of nerves over this thing.
No, it's perfect. It's perfect. And you mentioned just inspiration that you pulled from your own career and kind of poured into Jordan. Can you talk a little bit more about that? You know, how much of Jordan is parts of Tamron?
Yeah. You know, a lot of my core experiences, right? Like in this latest book, Watch Where They Hide, was actually inspired by a case that I did on Deadline Crime. Two cases specifically that I covered while I hosted the show Deadline Crime. So what you see in her actions and her experience following these leads really parallel what I experienced in covering these two specific cases. Some of her personal life, you know, I didn't get married until I was in my 40s. Jordan is in her 30s and she's trying to figure out if she'll be single and soon. She's 40, as it turned out in real life for me. But it really, I would say 30-40%, maybe half of what you see with Jordan is certainly inspired by my own life. But then there are so many other layers to her that I've pulled from other women that I work with in the news world, other things that I've been exposed to in my career, and truly some of the guests that I talk to every day. I really wanted to not only build this character who is trying to solve crimes, I wanted you to see what it is like for an ambitious young woman who loves her job and is out on a date with a guy who continues to say, you pay more attention to work than you do me. And for her to question, is she without the right one because she continues to put work first? And I wanted all of those juicy details of that in her, even though that's not where I am right now in my personal life.
Well, and that's an experience I think that so many, especially millennial women, can really attach to. We're like working women. We're trying to like work our way up and make like huge names for ourselves. And I feel like we are especially kind of the last generation where it's like you're getting, you know, like people talking down on that, or, you know, it's just a very hard kind of situation for a lot of us to be in. But there is one line from Watch Where They Hide. It was in the very beginning that I loved about Jordan. You said the extra scrutiny female talent has to put up with can be cruel and downright demoralizing in a way that I don't think people can truly grasp. And that's something that Alexis and I have especially experienced, like trying to be in this world where it's like, it's just an uphill battle. And can you kind of like speak to that?
Oh, absolutely. And I wanted to shed some light specifically in the news world, because I remember way back when I started my career, my first job, I made $14,500. I thought, oh my goodness, this is, you know, I'm just starting out. This is a big deal for me. I'm going to get it going. I'm going to get the ball. I had to buy more clothes than my male counterparts, because if I went on with the same outfit, I was going to be scrutinized. I had to be more aware of where I was living. I'm a woman, single, by myself, you know, and all makeup that my male counterpart did not have to buy. I had to just walk in the door presenting in a different way than my male counterpart, or I would have been scrutinized and judged. And that was coming from my $14,000 salary. He could walk in the same blue blazer, a different tie, maybe once a week, and the same white shirt as long as it wasn't stained, and no one would notice. But if I wore the same dress, and he likely, probably, to be honest with you, made five times more than I did. Mm-hmm. And that's a storyline that continues throughout when you think about even now. Look at national news, and men still make far more in most cases than their female counterparts, and our expense alone to present as like we are supposed to be there. You know, they tell you the end zone, we got the Super Bowl, act like you've been there before. For us to act like we belong there, we have to present in a certain way. And that's not cheap. And that's not vanity, by the way, because to the people at home, if our roots are showing, if anything, we get slammed and they don't hear the substance of what we're doing, which is reporting.
Yeah.
Ugh. Wow.
Being a woman sometimes.
Right.
Totally. And speaking of women, a couple of characters in your book I'd love to talk about. Yeah. Marla Hancock and Shelley, the sisters. Yeah. Now, yeah. Is there anything that inspired sort of that facet of the story?
You know, Alexis, I didn't realize it when I was writing it. So I, as I said, the case that Jordan is following in this book, inspired by two disappearances involving two women, very different life circumstances, but all roads pointed to a horrifying end for both of them. And when I was writing, you know, how do I get into this story and how do I bring how do I bring this to Jordan? She learns of Marla's disappearance after she is contacted by Marla's sister, Shelley. I think when the book was done, it truly, I don't know how I didn't know this. I don't know why I didn't know this, but it really, I am more Shelley in this book than I am Jordan. I've been very open that my sister's death was an unsolved murder. I've become an advocate for families and survivors of domestic violence after revealing my sister's story publicly. But when I was writing Shelley, and those who get a chance to read, Shelley's like a badass. And, you know, she takes, you know, she suffers no fools. She doesn't take no for an answer. And she really pounds the door to get someone to recognize that her sister is missing and that there's more to the story. And that's what I wish I'd done when my own sister's case happened. I, at the time, was a local news anchor. We were grappling as a family with the reality that my sister had suffered in a home where there was domestic violence. Like so many people at the time, we thought, as a family, the right thing was tough love, meaning you got, you know, get out of that relationship, come stay with us, leave that. Why are you staying? You know, the things that I now know after my work with survivors and organizations, you don't ask, but at the time, my family and I thought, we're going to, you know, get together, we're going to lock arms and we're going to walk out that door with her locking our arms. And when she pulled back and said, unlock those arms, I don't want to leave, it was hard for us to understand. And that created a divide in our relationship. And I'm glad and obviously just thankful to God that we were able to mend our relationship. But we had a huge falling out before she died after I'd witnessed an incident of violence. And I wanted to grab her and get her out of that world or that relationship. And she wasn't ready. And so what we see with Shelley and her defiant stance against Marla's husband, I think is definitely in many ways linked to my own personal story with my sister and things I wish I'd done and things I look back at and I'm still processing. But Shelley is a little bit of me for sure.
I saw the episode of your talk show where you had Leroy on to discuss your sister the first time. And I do think it's so, even hearing you talk about it now, it's so powerful, you know, because I still don't know how I would handle this if a sibling of mine, you know, because it seems like I want to shake them and rescue them. And it's not as simple. So I do think it's so wonderful that you decided to speak about it publicly. And I know I read an article where you talked about having reluctance to do so for a while.
Right.
Why was that? Why were you afraid to talk about it?
You know, I've been doing this for 30 years, meaning I've been a journalist for 30 years. And I think if we're being honest, we all know people who express skepticism when a celebrity comes forward. Oh, they're telling this because they've got a movie coming out. Oh, they're revealing this now because of this or the other. And I did not want to have people question why, you know, why is she telling the story? Why is it, you know, why are we just hearing this now? But the universe made me speak up. I was at an event in New York. I just moved here. And I think the MC who was supposed to participate had dropped out for some reason. And I was randomly, I don't even know how to this day they've got my name. I ended up going in. It's an organization called Day One. And their goal is to help young people, school age people, learn to love, healthy love, and the signs of when it's not healthy. All of these young, beautiful women, 15, 16 years old, maybe a little bit younger in some cases, were sharing how they'd experienced violence in their relationships, you know, middle school, early high school, when, you know, puppy love was actually far from that for them. It was brutal and cruel. And so I'm there at the event as the MC, and I started to share my sister's story as a way to heal. And also, I could not watch them be so brave and sit there and not offer words of truth. And the truth of the matter is that my sister had experienced the same thing or similar thing. And I, like so many other family members, didn't know what to do. And so here's my opportunity to use my platform. So the fear of people saying, oh, here comes another celebrity with problems, diminished greatly because I recognize the power of the platform. And so if a couple of people will be skeptical, I don't care. I care more about the other family members like my own who don't know how to offer that support in a healthy way with the hopes of that person getting out of the relationship.
And when you were talking to Leroy on your show, you kind of mentioned to him, you're like, you know, it's kind of taken so long because I didn't know what to say to you. Yeah. And with him kind of saying, you know, he hadn't talked about it, I think he said in 10 years or something like that, because he didn't know how to process that. Can you speak to that kind of mindset that you're in and what you thought that maybe he could be feeling at that time too?
You know, I think for so many people, and it's not that it was a family secret. I think when you feel helpless, it's a fight or flight, right? And I think for Leroy, I think for her other children, I think for my father who passed away soon after, the way to fight was to say nothing. And I know that sounds, you know, contrary to our beliefs, because fight means you know, usually you run into it, you're loud, you know, you beefing up, you get yourself ready. In this case, the fight meant silence. How are we going to fight this pain? How are we going to fight this trauma? How are we going to fight the reality of what happened? We're going to stay silent. And that's, I think, what people, you know, there's a lot of conversation about generational trauma and the curses passed on generationally. I just watched a phenomenal documentary on Max, like his Beautiful Life, Beautiful Portrait. And we had the photographer who turned her life story into a documentary. Her grandfather, as it turns out, was a serial predator. And all her life, she'd heard people say, well, he's creepy. It's her grandfather. And eventually he was convicted of preying on people in their family and others, countless others that he wasn't been convicted for, but he was two cases. Before he died, she interviewed him. And she did a whole series on Max about this trauma and this secret. In our case, the secret wasn't that, but the secret was we knew. And it wasn't that we accepted it. It wasn't that we allowed it. Of course not. We didn't know how to, and some people have even asked me, why didn't you call the police? You know, sending him, that person to jail was not going to end that relationship because he would be out. You know, that would only create even more of a divide. So when Leroy came on the show, I asked him, do you want to come on the show? And he's, you know, he was ready and we were ready to have the conversation together because at the end of the day, I lost a sister, but he lost a mother. And when he says, you know, his son asked, where's my grandma? Now that's the story. And I wanted the audience to see his story because his story is that of millions.
He seems like such a sweet person, by the way.
Oh, he's like the sweetest guy ever. He's like the guy that if he passed a stray puppy every 15 yards, he would have a house of stray puppies. He's a kid, sweet kid, sweet kid.
I mean, you can totally see, and your relationship is really sweet with each other.
Great.
And so
speaking of, you know, abuse and domestic violence, domestic abuse, one of the characters in the book, Jim Hancock, you know, there's reference to obviously verbal abuse and financial abuse with Marla. Can you talk kind of about how it's abuse isn't kind of a one size fits all? And it doesn't always look like what you one thing or another.
And that was important. Thank you for pointing that out. Like I, that was important because we have this ongoing conversation about what abuse looks like and what abuse is. I'll tell you, I was just having a dialogue with a young person that I mentor, and they are in a relationship where the individual that they're dating continues to threaten suicide, and it has turned into this very obvious, you can imagine, traumatic situation. And I had to say to them, listen, you've got to go to therapy. They need to go to separate therapists. But the reality is it possible that this person really means these threats? Of course. But the frequency of it has turned to manipulation. It has turned into, if you don't stay with me, it's a blackmail. And now you're in knots. And this, there's no healthy, you know, way out of this. And I encouraged them to immediately go to see a therapist and immediately find a support team to help in dealing with this, because the person has such guilt right now, right? And I was, as now with my work with survivors of domestic violence, you're always very cautious because you don't know what someone's intention or heart truly is. But manipulation of financial, manipulation of my life, you must stay with me or I will kill myself. All of that is abuse. And it was hard for them to see themselves as an someone who was being manipulated and abused, because you're worried about, oh my, no, it's not. They're going to take their life. Well, they're using that in this case, as a form of manipulation and abuse.
Yeah, that's what's, I think, so eye-opening in general about the conversations that people are having regarding domestic violence and abuse, because back in the day, it was just like physical abuse was the only type of abuse. And even learning about
the only type people were talking about, right? Because, you know, listen, women couldn't have your own bank account. I think it's until the 70s, late 60s, 70s. So you had that type of financial abuse, but people didn't talk about it. We didn't start really talking about the physical abuse publicly until, oh gosh, I'm going to tell you, in my mind, right, 25 Ray Rice case, there were some high profile cases of celebrities that brought this conversation to my generation and thus your generation. But it took these big high profile caught on camera pictures leaked for folks to say, oh my gosh, this is real. And now, you know, Serena Williams talks a lot about helping women who've been survivors of financial abuse. So we're seeing more of that dialogue. But yeah, I worked with the Purple Leash Foundation. They help shelters become equipped to take families who have pets, because only like 20% of the shelters take families who have pets. And abusers will use an animal and say, if you leave me, I'm going to kill your cat. If you leave me, I'm going to kill your dog. And people stay, because that's their family member. So the types of abuse far expand past physical. And now people are talking about it. And that's why I wanted the readers to see that level and read about that level of financial abuse that it suspected was happening in this relationship in the book.
But yeah, we wanted to talk about the Purple Leash Project, because I had never even thought about that being a reason why people would stay. So I just think that that is such a incredible cause to be working with. I was really blown away when I was reading about it.
I didn't know it either. You know, I partnered with them, I think maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and I have a bird, which I talk about, Josephine Berker. I have my dog, Exodus, my son's Moses. And so there's not a moment of my life that I can recall that I didn't have a pet. Even in college, I stuck a dog in my dorm. That's how, you know, I was that person with the dog in the dorm, paying off everybody to be quiet. But Yeah, I didn't know it. And when you think about it, it makes perfect sense. And you understand why the shelters can't take in the pets, because they're not equipped to take in. It's not that they don't want to. It takes a special facility and all of these other things. And the pet has needs. And many times when someone's fleeing, they have nothing. They have no money. So it's supporting the mother or the father and the children who fled the violence and now having to support the pet. And so with Purina and the Purple Leash Foundation, there was a great effort to try to improve the numbers, because people do stay. And I completely understand why. This is not a pet. This is your loved one. And if someone is saying they're going to harm your loved one, to leave your loved one in that environment, it's too much to bear.
No, and now that you mention it too, and we've covered hundreds of true crime cases, we've covered cases where animals have been killed prior to in the lead up to a domestic violence murder. And it's, you're right, I would never leave my dog, you know, I just wouldn't. Yeah. So it's a really wonderful cause. And there's something you said earlier in our conversation that I thought was so interesting. So, you know, obviously, like, the Jordan Manning inspiration, a lot of that has pulled from you, but not till the end of the book did you realize that you were more Shelley.
Yeah.
And that sounds like something coming from your subconscious, or maybe, you know, like something in your writing process that maybe you didn't even realize, that I think is so cool.
And I didn't. I mean, I'll tell you, I the two cases that inspired this, I got to know the family members. So I thought that I was pulling in some of what I learned from them. In one case in particular in Michigan, where the victim disappeared, their family had a great little plot of land off of the lake, and it was not fancy, but it was just like their kind of their pilgrimage spot, right? The whole family would go to this lake house, and I spent some time at this lake house and got to know the family and saw them rally year after year to try to find the woman in this case that disappeared, and they never recovered her body. Years later, and the family would have this moment together to remember her and to search for her. She was missing for a very long time, and so I thought I was pulling from their experience. And then when I started to reread the book and reread the chapters, and it was like a light bulb moment. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm Shelley. This is so fascinating. But it was completely subconscious. When I'm writing, I often do it in the morning. You know, I get people ask, when is your writing process like? We have a little cottage in Sag Harbor in New York, and I feel very writery, like Central Cast writer mug, you know, evergreen trees. I'm on the porch and there I am. Yes. And I'm thinking, like, this is so corny. I don't know if like the scene from Love Actually, when he's like by the lake typing, that's gotta be, I'm like there with my coffee mug, sitting on my porch, surrounded by the trees and listening to the birds. God. And I'm writing, and my son is usually asleep, fingers crossed. And I just kind of start, I voice dictate a lot. And then I get it transcribed. That's just the way my thought process works. But I'm just speaking into my recorder, and I'm writing this story, and I'm envisioning. And then when I see it on paper, I'm like, whoa, that's me. Shelley is me this time.
That's so crazy.
Who I wish I was at the time of my sister's incident.
Yeah. And speaking of that, you had mentioned in an interview that I had read about, you know, it took a long time for you to get over the guilt that you had from what you were talking about earlier, where it was like, you know, we're walking arm in arm out of here and I'll save you and, you know, whatever. And you obviously, looking back on that, being like, I wish, you know, I could have done things a little bit different. Can you talk a little bit more about that and what you've done to forgive yourself and give yourself grace? Because I'm sure that there are a lot of people out there whose loved ones have, you know, are in domestic situations and have tried to get them out the same way.
Mm-hmm. For me, what I've done is, after the experience at the event with Day One, I've aligned myself with organizations like Safe Horizon, which is the largest domestic violence shelter in the country. I've gone in and spoke to different organizations and different people and tried to explore even the conversation of what support can we offer to abusers who want to rehabilitate. You know, it's often seen from the lens of the survivor, but so many people, and the majority men, I mean, when you look at this, of course, there are men who are victims of domestic violence, but in most cases, men are the perpetrators of the violence, right? And some of these men have only seen that. And we talk so much about social emotional development, right? Now I have a son, and that's the big thing, right? I just read this article. So it doesn't matter if your kids, your, you know, ABCs and how to, if their social emotional development is not there, that impacts everything. The rest doesn't matter. And so there's so much dialogue right now, rightfully so, about social emotional support. And one of the things that I've been working on is having that conversation about social emotional support when it comes to men who carry out these acts. Because when you do extract the father in some cases, especially a father who may be someone who can learn and change, right? You've disrupted the entire dynamic of the family. And is there a way to save this family in a healthy, safe way? And I've talked with organizations and partners regarding that part of the conversation. And that's all helped me heal, right? I use that word with caution, because I don't know if you ever heal from something like that, the guilt, but I find purpose, right? I find purpose in my steps in trying to help other people. And that's been a big part of the work that I do. When looking back at, you know, we never, you know, said awful things to my sister. We never, you know, none of that. It was truly, let's lock arms and walk out of here together. We don't need this and you don't need it. And now I know listening without judgment, allowing for that pause, you know, the pregnant pause, as they call it. You know, we were trying to fill the air when we would talk with her. She get very quiet and you're trying to fill the air. And sometimes the air has to just sit still. And the person just know you're offering them a place of calm, a place of grace. You just use the word Jack, place of grace, that they, when they are ready, hopefully will understand with very clear eyes and a very clear heart that you are there not to judge. You are there to truly support. And that's what we didn't know then.
And I think just people who are trying to rescue loved ones from these situations, sure, it's not intuitive to do what you're describing.
No.
Because you have such an emotional response to this idea that someone's hurting someone you love, that you like want to just rip them from the situation. So it really takes like self-awareness, and because it's not intuitive to take it slow and try to understand, because like your fight or flight goes in. You're like, I'm going to kill this man who's doing it. You're leaving right now. Like that's what you're.
And you know, real talk. That's real talk. When I witnessed the incident with my sister at her home, at my home, I was at my home in Chicago, and I was upstairs. I had a townhouse, and I was upstairs, and I heard this like, this sound, you know, disruption. And I ran downstairs, and they were in, I transformed like a little den into an additional guest room, and they were in that guest room area. I came down, there was a glass table, it was broken, and there was debris and things everywhere, and she had a knot. And of course, as you said, my instinct, I remember grabbing a broom, and it was connected to my garage, and I grabbed this broom and I'm like, get out, you know, and I'm swinging at the air, not going to hit him, but like trying to just, and think about that. You're like, I'm meeting violence with violence. And I'm like, you liar, I'm right here. And I see what you're doing. And she fell on him. And then I'm, get out of my house. I called my dad, and I'm, get out of my house. Of course I wanted to take that broom and just start just wailing on this person. But, you know, this, I don't know what it was, self-control. Maybe I was a reporter at the time. I can tell you that I remember like, oh God, the police would be coming, you know, all of these things. I didn't want to get in trouble because now he could say I assaulted him, you know, all of these things. But, and I would be the person saying, well, I was defending my sister. And that just creates a whole nother. So you're right about it. Just having the presence of mind. I think it was just God and the universe that did not cause it to escalate and turn into something that could have been harmful to me in my career and kept me from doing what I'm doing now, which is hopefully helping families understand the right way to handle it.
Wow. And can you just tell us a little about your sister and about your relationship and how you were like growing up?
Oh, wow. So my family was a blended family. And my fun fact, I was raised by my stepfather, who's the dad that God meant for me to have. And with my stepfather, my mother brought, you know, my brother and I, and then he brought his kids. And so we became this instant blended family. And early on, it was really established that we didn't say stepsister or half brother or stepdad. My dad is like family's family. You know, many times I would come home and there was somebody crashed on our sofa because they had a challenging, you know, financial situation and they were family. You know, we call people cousins that I'm sure are not my cousin. And so we just kind of grew up in that culture. And I always wanted a bigger sister. I always wanted an older sister. And suddenly here I am. And she's very glamorous and beautiful. And I just remember vividly, you know, my sister coming back from some like beauty salon thing. And she did this moisturizing hair. And she's like, no, this is how you do it. And I'm like in sixth grade and I've got this silky, much more hair than I have now. And, you know, and she's always, you know, like fussing over me, and she had great style and the life of the party and always the raucous one who was going to, I think my father's last birthday that we all celebrated together. My little niece was like 2 years old at the time. And my sister insisted on letting her eat like some solid food that she wasn't ready for. And we turn around and there they are like gnawing down on like a chicken wing or something. We're like, don't give that baby that, you know. She was always the person who's going to push the limit and have a great time. Very, very, just a good spirit, right? And maybe in many ways, didn't realize how much people loved her and rooted for her. You know, I just saw Dolce Sloan. She's a comedian on The Daily Show, and she's written a book about her life, and she talked about how we say things to ourselves, some things to ourselves that we would never let anybody else say to us. I mean, we look at our mirror, we call ourselves, you know, names about our weight or our look, or I'm a loser, I'm a failure, things we would never let someone say to us. And I think that at different points in my sister's life, for reasons that only she will know, she fell into that trap a little longer than we all did. We all do it. But I think some people fall into that trap a little longer. And I think that led her to believe that she deserved to be in bad relationships. And that, you know, that was her struggle. But her light was her light. And her light was one that was just fun. And as I said, just I can think very clearly about the video that my dad shot on the VHS cam where we're getting ready for some prom or some event, and she's doing my hair and fixing my bodice and snatching me in and all of these things. It's just fun, just a fun person.
I love that. It seemed like you guys had a really good relationship.
Yeah.
Lex, do you have any other questions before we move on?
I do. I have one more about the end of the book. So there's an incredible twist at the end. I love it because it's like not what you're expecting, but there is resolution at the end of the book.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just bringing that back to real life, you know, you've dealt with hundreds of families, you have personal experience, you know, thousands of families probably. You know, getting an answer, you know, getting answers versus not getting answers, you know, how much harder is it to not, I don't believe in the word closure, like that doesn't exist with this magnitude of loss, but what do you think about that?
Oh, I think, you know, I've done so many stories and I'm sure we've all been a part of something where people want answers, right? In the worst case, it's in the case of a loss of a loved one, right? But, you know, we just did on my talk show, we had a woman who was ghosted by her husband of 18 years. She came home and he'd taken everything except for their wedding dress. It went viral like 3 years ago. She's a reoccurring guest that we have on. And now she's got a new boyfriend and we check in with her from time to time. And she's now gotten herself, you know, together. She's working out, but she said, you know, I'll never forget. She said, he had me believing he was my heir. And I came home to nothing. He even took the internet cord for the cable, like just white and left the wedding dress. and never gave her closure, right? To your point, is that never gave her the answer, right? Mm-hmm. And by the way, there's no good answer, but never gave her an answer. And that's a hole, right? She's moved on, but there's a hole, right? I was wondering. And now take it to the most extreme of not knowing what happened to someone you love, not knowing where they are and visualizing a reunion. In the case of that was inspired by this, they hadn't found her body. And so you think, oh gosh, maybe I'll walk into a Walmart and that, is that her? What that looked like? Cause you don't know what happened to the person. And so for me in the book and offering up an answer was just taken from, you know, different cases and knowing how clearly it feels for people to not know versus the most painful answer of here's what happened.
Well, and not having the person be held accountable, you know,
accountable.
Like in the case of your sister, you know, how do you deal with that?
You know, for me, it's been very hard for many reasons, legal reasons. You know, you can't say too much and you wonder if the person sees you talking and if they we already know who was in the house. And I know what detectives told me that day, but I think for us, it was never a question of who. And to be honest with you, not even a question of why. On my sister's last day, she talked to my mother and said she wanted out of this relationship. So we concluded that, you know, that was a snapping point for that individual. I'm sure there's a different version that would come in a legal court and we'd hear much more to a story. But I am at a point for me, it doesn't matter why, right? It doesn't matter the details. The end was the end. And now my nephew doesn't get the chance to have his son meet his grandmother and she doesn't get. So yeah. I've moved past it, but I'm in a different position. I can't say what my nephew feels in his heart every day and the loss that he feels for me. It's a bit different, but in the book, you know, I wanted to explore, I wrote a couple of different versions, but because this is fiction and I did want to keep this in this fantasy world to some degree, it's inspired by real life events. It's inspired by my life, but I'm a thriller writer and I wanted you to end the book going, what was Tamron Hall thinking with this ending? Because it is an escapism too, right? I don't want
I love it.
The episode of Deadline Cry. I want it, even in the first book, there's a scene where Jordan is going to the parking lot and she is attacked. And I wanted that scene because I wanted you to understand this is fiction and this is a thriller. And, you know, thankfully as a reporter, I never had anyone jump me outside of my car and who was pissed off because I covered a story, thank goodness. But I wanted to have that thriller edge to it, that fantasy, that shocking ending that people go back and say, wait a minute, how did that, you know?
It was an amazing twist. Didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
It was great.
I mean, the book is amazing.
Kind of bonkers. It's my husband's like, what's going on in that sick mind of yours?
You're like, it's like a release. And I'm sure it was cathartic to write too. Like,
it is. And it kept me, you know, having such a far out ending also kept it in the world of, this is not my life. It's a thriller. And to take that escapism, to bring in the escapism portion of it, that is needed. Cause I didn't want people to, you know, I've left many episodes of Deadline Crime just absolutely sobbing and not being able to reset my brain. And that's why it was important to layer in, you know, her love life, Jordan's love life, and layer in her friendships and layer in the journey of a young woman in her 30s with a good career, but wanting a better career, but not knowing what she wants. That is what makes her a well-rounded character.
Number one, I wanted to ask you, because I'm sure you've thought about it, when this gets turned into a TV show or a series, who is playing Jordan Manning?
Okay, so this is so random, but I'll tell you, I hadn't thought about it because I'm like, well, and then I was with Michelle Williams from Destiny's Child.
Oh, love her.
We love her.
Do you know she studied criminal justice in her past? When? I know.
When?
I did not. What? Exactly. When? When she was touring before, the world?
Yes, but barely before that. And Sean's like, hey. Like, I'm just like out of the box. I don't even know if she's really into. I know she does some acting. I was like, Michelle Williams is Jordan Manning.
Yes.
That's so funny with her criminal justice forensic past. But no, I'd love just anyone who can bring this relatable character to life. I know it's not relatable to think like I'm solving crime, but I told someone one day, we all found a way to find four women who traipsed around New York and Manolo Blahnik's relatable characters, right?
So 100%.
Women from all around the world related to these four women and still do when you watch the series. And I want her to be that character. I want her not to just be relatable to Black women or women in the news or women around her age. I want her to be a fully thought out character whose journey on different levels you can see yourself in. No, most of us are not going to jump out and solve a crime, but we will have those crossroads of romance, crossroads of life, and what am I doing? And is this what I really want to do? We all have moments where we need our friends and our girlfriends and a good drink and a good, you know, cry. Many of us, like myself, we have been at the wedding and you are the bridesmaid and not the bride. And you're wondering, when is it my turn up at bat? You know, and I wanted her to have all of these moments because it's been a part of my journey and the journeys of many women around me, while also kicking butt to do what's right. Because I think that's the woman who will enjoy or the person who will enjoy this book. Thriller, people who are into this genre and who are intrigued by what we do. But I also like the idea that she, at the end of the day, is someone who just wants what's right. And I think most people are that.
Well, and speaking of weddings, I heard about the story of how you met your husband, and I loved it. Can you tell us that story? Because it's like one of my favorite things. And there's been this whole talk on TikTok about the invisible string theory, about how like your soulmate has always been around you, but it's just like takes the perfect circumstance.
Oh my God. I know. It's funny. We were talking about that on our show. It's so funny because my husband, we met, oh wow, I don't know how many years ago, and he was representing an actor, an actress, and we were at the same event, and he said to me, oh, that this person was a fan and wanted to invite me to their home. And I was like, I don't know you and I don't know them. And I'm like, no, thank you. And I gave him my number. My husband happens to be a manager and he's done TV and he's done music. So I thought, okay, he's trying to represent me. He kept calling and I was like, I don't know if I represent it. And we would run into each other from time to time. And he would always say, what are the odds? And these random places, we're at a gallery opening at the Standard Hotel, I think, or the Edition Hotel in New York. And he is there with a friend of his, and Dylan McDermott, actually, he's there. And he's like, oh, what are the odds? I'm here with my friend Dylan. I'm like, I don't know. And then I'm leaving this restaurant, Quadrille the Italian. I'd never even been there. And I was meeting my friends. I'm going, and he's like, what are the odds? I'm like, I don't know. And then the day or two after I was leaving the Today Show, after I was no longer going to be on that show, I decided, my friend Clive Davis invited me to the Grammys. I'm on the plane. I get on the plane, and there's the guy that I had just broken up with not long ago. And he's there with a whole new woman, this like glamazon model. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? And I'm sitting in front of them and I'm like, okay, just look straight ahead. Just look straight ahead. But I can hear they're like, ha, 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 they're giggling. And I'm like, ah. And lo and behold, Steven walks on the plane and I'm like, and I was like, and he's like, oh, hey. So I started chatting him up so that I would be distracted from what was happening behind me. We get off the plane. I'm still chatting him up so I don't have to watch the two of them walk past me. And we ran into each other one more time at the Sunset Marquee. And he said, you know, let's go get some pizza. I know the best pizza in New York. And I was like, no, you don't. He's like, yes. And he's like, ah. And they're kind of like roasting each other over pizza. And then we went out and I think we moved in like the next week or so.
Oh, I can love I tell you, it. I've never run into anyone that many times, I don't think,
in
ever.
My life.
And you being like, I don't know, you're just, maybe you're following me, but what are the
I
odds?
I know, were you like, right, are you stalking me?
What are the odds? Exactly, because he's like, what are the odds? I'm like, I don't know. He's like,
I don't know, you have a tracker on my car, so
I don't know. I'm like, you got a low jack on my room. I'm like, what are you doing? One of those little Apple Pods, leave me alone. So
I love it. That's a great story.
I just I thought it was so cute, and I just love the what are the odds. Like, it's just,
yeah, what are the odds?
It's really sweet. And then you guys got married in 2019, right?
Yeah, well, 2018, I think. 2018, I'm terrible with names. We had a baby in 2019, we had a baby. Yeah.
So, and that's what I thought was so interesting. It's you wow. got married, had a baby, and then launched your show all within a year. And how old were you? 48, I think, at the time?
48. Yeah, I was 48. I was 48 years old. We'd gone through, so we, as I said, moved in straight away. And I think that first day we talked about, do we want to be parents? And we had a very honest and realistic conversation based on age about that. And we pursued IVF and, you know, had a couple of unsuccessful situations. And then just when I decided, okay, we'll just adopt, because we truly, and I say just adopt, we will adopt. It didn't, for us, it didn't matter how we were going to become parents. We were trying this route, but we weren't committed to one plan. And and then we got pregnant, you know, or I got pregnant. I know everyone says we, but I'm like, I got pregnant.
He did the work.
And he was there. So we had Moses, and the show all kind of happened. In fact, on the day we shot my pilot, that was the day that I learned that the IVF transfer had taken and that we were on our way. You know, nothing is guaranteed even at that moment, but we learned that we were on our way and the show was on its way. And I just... someone said to me, you know, you don't do anything, you don't paste anything out, do you? It's feast or famine with you. And I said, clearly. And it's worked out. You know, my son's now 4 years old and he's a hoot. And, you know, this morning was challenging because he decided he does not want to brush his teeth anymore. And trying to tell a 4-year old the importance of brushing their teeth is very challenging while they want to do their Lego playhouse thing. And I'm like, oh my God, dude, I gotta get going. You gotta, you know, and he's like, this is, but you know, I laugh at everything that he does. He's a funny, funny fellow. And someone asked me, you know, how different it would be if I were in my 30s, and I'm sure very different, but this version suits me just fine. My grandfather used to always say, you know, I want to go where the weather suits my clothes. This life suits me just fine at this age, and I quite enjoy it.
Amazing.
I love that. And I guess we'll end on, you know, obviously this all happened for you in your 40s. Do you have any advice for, we're in our mid-30s, any gals that are our age that, you know, feel like they don't have anything figured out? Maybe you're looking for a partner. Maybe your job is, you know, everybody's getting laid off. Like, where? What kind of advice do you have for younger women and how things can truly happen for you later in life?
You know, I think, honestly, I used to tell people I was so busy doing the next thing that I didn't sit in the thing that I was in. So my analogy was I was growing the garden and not stopped to smell my roses. And I used to look at that as a regret, and I actually don't anymore, because you got to keep it moving to keep it growing and to keep it, especially as a woman, right? And so I used to say that and look at it like, oh gosh, I should have just settled in more. And I don't now think that. What I do now believe at this point, and it might change again, is learning what's important. Like, so I know we call it prioritizing, but for me, everything used to be a 10, right? Oh my God, this, I was a higher hero. Everything was urgent. Everything was now. And I've learned that, you know, react to a one on a one. You know what I mean? Don't, my husband likes to say, don't put a 20 on a 10. Mm. Like, I measure your reaction to things, you know, measure your reaction to people. I used to feel that I needed to prove that, but through the last word, I'm going to get the last, especially if I'm right, I'm getting the last word. You may not be worth my last word. Ooh. You know, letting people have that view of me is okay. I don't need to change everyone's opinion of me. I don't need to fight for every love. Like on the scale of 1 to 10, I like him and I might be a little offended that he, you know, okay, goodbye, bye. Go cheat because I don't want you anyway. You know what I mean? But,
yeah.
But the minute that someone cheats, you're like, and your ego.
Yeah, it's ego.
How dare you versus I just kind of liked you. And now I don't have a reason, you know, and learning to not have that FOMO, right? You know, you get online and everybody's in Tulum. I tell my niece the other day, I'm like, no, everybody's not. You know, like
Alexis was last week.
I just got home 2 days ago.
Literally from Tulum.
Do not tell my niece that. She goes, you were just on Alexis on that. But it's measuring your response. Because if you see, you know, Alexis was in Tulum. Now I've got to get to Tulum. So now I'm going to use my this. And now maybe it's not your time to go.
Yeah.
You know, just really positioning perspective versus priority, right? That's not what I'm saying is put things in perspective. What you'll get to your trip. You'll get to your put it in perspective and measure how you react to it. Don't let people who are a one pull a five out of you.
Your next book should be Tamron's Book of Wisdom.
Oh my God, I'm moved.
Love it.
Thank you so much, Tamron. This was amazing.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Tamron. It was so, so wonderful to talk to you. And thank you for being so candid and for the time. Yeah. And congratulations. I can't wait for your next one.
Yeah,
I know. I can't wait.
Well, we got to get this one in some hands and then we'll write the next one.
Oh, yeah.
We're with you.
All of our listeners are going to buy it. Maybe we can do a giveaway. We can talk to Taylor about that of a book on our Instagram.
Let's do it.
I would love that. I would love that. Well, I appreciate you so much.
We appreciate you and have a good rest of the day. I'm sure it's going to be an exhausting one. So
that's all right.
Godspeed.
I'm going to need some more water. All right. Godspeed to you as well.
Bye-bye. Okay.
Bye, Tamron.
Bye, honey.
Having a team feels like having your own live-in influencer. Somehow you know the latest makeup trend and the fact that skinny jeans are not the most flattering pants. Now it's time for you to show them what's up, thanks to Domino's. From April 22nd through April 28th, carry out as many large two-topping pizzas from Domino's as you want for only $6.99 each. And teach your kiddo that saving money and Domino's pizza will never go out of style. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 4/22 through 4/28. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary.